Om Babaji, Om Jesus, Om Lahari Mahashay, Om Swami Sri Yukteswarji, Om Master, Om Mother, saints and sages of all religions, we bow to all of you. Be with us during this time in which we seek to enter into the higher kingdoms, the higher heavens, and know you as you are, to know the infinite God, to become one with him. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. So lovely for us to be here once again. We broadcast from Southern California. Reading from today's posting, the picture, the beginning is Rama, Sita, Lakshman, and all those who were victors in the great war that had taken place. And the caption underneath says, Ram and Sita and company, after rescuing Sita from the bestial Ravana. Lakshman, Ram's brother, standing to the right, always looking at his sister-in-law, the lovely Sita, as his mother, even though they traveled long years together in the wilderness, always the perfect gentleman. There has been much in the news about men in high positions who have abused their power by taking advantage of women, anywhere from exercising poor judgment about sexual advancements to criminal molestation and rape. It is as if the stars have taken a turn and what has occurred behind closed doors has now come into the open. After Cain murdered his brother Abel, he infamously said to God, when he was asked about Abel, Am I my brother's keeper? Am I my brother's keeper? The answer is, yes, of course you are. Not only do you not murder your brother out of jealousy, but you are here to positively love and care for him. And for the one who parses words may ask, Who is my brother? The same question was put to Jesus when he asked, Who is my neighbor? The Master answered that question by relating a story about the Good Samaritan. The hero in the story, a man from Samaria, stopped to help a hurt man on the side of the road after a priest and a Levite had passed him by. Both were considered holy by birth. Remembering that Samaritans were considered untouchable by those in Jesus' audience, it was just such an unlikely fellow who rendered the assistance to the stranger. The moral of the story: all humanity are our neighbors and our brothers. This applies to our sisters as well. Mother Hamilton loved the differences between the sexes, and she emphasized with us the proper relationship between the two. Some thought Mother was not with the times. However, great principles prove themselves to be timeless. We collectively suffer when true principles are trampled. We are all affected when any one of our sisters are treated with disrespect, her inner qualities not seen or even looked for. I am sure many of us have had moments when we are not at our best in how we treated one another. However, let us learn from our mistakes and strive to do better. Remember, nothing is done in secret that shall not be shouted from the rooftops. Let us be our brothers' and our sisters' keepers, to support one another in bringing out the best in one another. Our time here is short, but we are accountable for what we do. So let us do right at all times and in all places, and more than that, see all others in their true essence as beings of divine origins, and to be respected as such. This is such a big subject because it seems, perhaps more even so in Western culture, that sexuality has taken on such a tremendous presence in media and print and television and movies. You see it everywhere. And so oftentimes there is not that respect. There is not that mystery. There is not that seeking out for the divine in another. Lakshman was at one time accused, when Sita was under great duress, that he had been looking at her as more than a brother. And he was very offended by this, because he had not even looked above her ankles. He knew what her anklets looked like, but not the rest of her, because he did not want that to enter into their relationship. He was instructed by his own mother, when he was leaving on this journey with Ram and Sita, to see Sita as his mother. It changes your relationship with women or with men when you see them as sister or as brother, mother or father, as son or daughter, because it takes away that sexual charge. Even Papa Ramdas would not look directly into the eyes of women. And this disconcerted mother at first, nor would he touch or hug them. And so when Papa hugged Ralph, mother's husband, and he went into a state of ecstasy, she asked whether he would do the same for her, and he said, "It is not necessary with you." So he kept, as an example for us all, those strict kind of bounds. So we must be mindful of when there is a sexual charge between two people. You may have known somebody for some time, and suddenly it's just there. It's outside of your control, so to speak. So what do you do with that then? You create a distance if you are not husband and wife. You create a little separation so that that spark doesn't grow into a flame, and a flame into a consuming fire. It is so much easier to stop it and control it at the early stages than when it has taken on a whole life unto itself. The feeling nature inside of you will speak to the reasoning nature, and you'll find all kinds of reasons to go against what you know is true and correct. You will do things hidden that you would not do things in the open. One of the things that was my habit for so long, I still occasionally do, is that when I was faced with some question and I wasn't sure of the answer, in my mind, I would surround myself with all the masters, with Mother and Master, Sri Yukteswar, Lahiri Mahasaya, Babaji, Jesus, Papa, Swamiji, Mataji, and I would present the issue before them. You see, there's something inside of us, especially when we know it's not quite correct, that we don't want to expose it to the light. We don't want to be corrected. But by doing this, I felt their guidance, their presence, and their no-nonsense attitude when it came to absolute truth and doing the right thing. And oftentimes this helped clarify for me, no, this is not the right thing, or it could be a yes. It's all right. Go forward with it. So bring it out into the light. Don't do anything in darkness that you think will be kept in darkness. Jesus himself said it, that that which is done in secret shall be shouted from the rooftops. All of your actions in the astral worlds are known to all. Anyone can look and see what you have done. They can see your aura and read your whole past if they are developed to that point. So there is no place to hide. There is nothing that you can do that is outside of the bounds of a true and a great master. When we leave this body, we stand before the judge, and the judge is our own inner Christ, our own inner self, our inmost self. And that inmost self knows the truth. It knows what we have done, and it knows whether it is right or whether it is wrong. Now, if we have made a mistake, genuinely, trying to do the right thing, but somehow misjudged a situation, that is one thing. But so oftentimes is the case that we have gone ahead and done something, even though when we know it is not true and correct, we are depending on it remaining hidden in secret. Do this practice. Bring it out in front of all the masters. Talk it over with a saint. When I was getting the inner prompting to get married to Carla, I wanted to make sure, it's an important decision for me and for others, and I very much wanted it to be the right decision. And so I wrote to Reverend Larry, and he wrote back that he was full in favor. And that was good, and I was glad to get that. And then I wrote to Swami Satchidananda, and he said he was initially surprised, but that it was God's will that that should proceed. And yet there is something inside of me that was not getting the full green light. So I investigated that, and finally it came out that it was Master. I knew that Mother's okay was on it, but it was Master, and that he had led a monk's life, and it encouraged others to do the same. And I knew that I did not want to disappoint him in any way. And so I took it to him and asked him, is this the right thing for me to do? And I meditated for many days, and finally I got a wonderful response. And Master appeared before my inner vision, and he said, yes, this should occur. That he came to do a very specific work, that he was influencing and helping to change the entire Western consciousness through his coming to America and staying here and living here. But that he also, and the work needed and was benefited by having those who had realized God who lived in the married state, and that that would be the majority of people who were following this path. That should be the standard then. That should be the thing that is held out. And a monk can't do that quite in the same way that an individual who is married. So he gave his full approval for that to go forward, and that Carla was the right person. So you see, we are so loath to do that when we are faced with decisions, to really investigate it. And when I got that from Master, I felt all the green lights then. And I needed that assurance because it was not welcome news by everybody. It was different than many people thought I should live my life. They had been used to me being a single gent and living more of a monk's life. And getting married somehow went against their idea of what that should look like. And so there were storms and there were difficulties as a result, and Carla got some of that as well. And so she needed to be more and more anchored in God. And this is the truth of all tests that come to us, to reach out for God when we come to the end of our own strength, that we should turn to God, that we should open ourselves to Him. If we are struggling with some temptation, open yourself to the light of God. Show Him exactly what you're struggling with. Ask His presence to come in, His power, His intelligence, to guide you, to give you the power to overcome whatever it is that you are facing. And through that opening toward the light and toward God, you change things. There is a principle in family therapy. And in family therapy, you open the family system to more, that there's something stuck. And it's because it's become too enclosed, too self-serving. And so you open the door. I worked with a famous family therapist for a time, and he was telling me about how he was working with this family. And when they called, they had a son who was having difficulty. And according to the family systems therapy, you bring in everybody. So he says, I want the whole family to come in. And they were taken aback. They just thought they were going to send their son in for some therapy and get him fixed. But systems theory says that it's a problem with the whole system, even though it's the son who's acting out. And so he said, not only do I want everybody to come in, I want you to bring in the family dog as well. What? Our family dog as well? And then he started adding a few more things, and they said, all right, we'll all come in. If you take that same principle, that you can get so self-involved, you can get so focused on your own internal life, and you get into a pattern that really doesn't work for you, then you expose it to God. You open up the system. You open it up to Guru. You open up to saints and sages and to the light. And in doing this, you change the situation because now you have opened the system and it's no longer a closed system. It is very interesting how so many of these things in so many times of history have seemingly were to go on in the dark, behind closed doors that nobody would know. We should always act as if everyone knows. And as a result of that, mostly that God knows, that the divine light inside of you knows, and that you shine that light upon yourself and upon all of your thoughts, words, and actions. And you will know whether that was the right or the wrong thing to do. I wanted to read some from the Gospel of Ramakrishna. And this is the Master, Ramakrishna, speaking. God and His glory. This universe is His glory. People see His glory and forget everything. They do not seek God, whose glory is this world. All seek to enjoy women and gold. But there is, and by that, what he meant was sex and greed. And he used that, and when he talked to the women, he would talk about men and gold. So it's nothing specifically against women here. But it is being sex consciousness or greed consciousness. All seek to enjoy women and gold, but there is too much misery and worry in that. This world is like a whirlpool of Vishlakasa, that is a stream that was nearby that had great whirlpools in it. Once a boat gets into it, there is no hope of its rescue. Again, the world is like a thorny bush. You have hardly freed yourself from one set of thorns before you get entangled in another. Once again, you enter a labyrinth. You find it very difficult to get out. Living in the world, a man becomes seared, as it were. Then a devotee asks, then, what is the way, sir? And the Master, prayer and the company of holy men. You cannot get rid of an ailment without the help of a physician. But it is not enough to be in the company of religious people only for a day. You should constantly seek it, for the disease has become chronic. Again, you can't understand the pulse rightly unless you live with a physician. Moving with him constantly, you learn to distinguish between the pulse of phlegm and the pulse of bile. This is referring to an Ayurvedic physician. And the devotee, what is the good of holy company? Master, it begets yearning for God. It begets love for God. Nothing whatsoever is achieved in spiritual life without yearning. By constantly living in the company of holy men, the soul becomes restless for God. This yearning is like a state of mind of a man who has someone ill in the family. His mind is in a state of perpetual restlessness, thinking of how the sick person may be cured. Or again, one should feel a yearning for God like the yearning of a man who has lost his job and is wandering from one office to another in search of work. If he is rejected at a certain place, which has no vacancy, he goes there again the next day and inquires, is there any vacancy today? There is another way. Earnestly pray to God. God is our very own. We should say to him, O God, what is thy nature? Reveal thyself to me. Thou must show me thyself to me. For why else hast thou created me? Some Sikh devotees once said to me, God is full of compassion. I said, but why should we call him compassionate? He is our creator. What is there to be wondered at if he is kind to us? Parents bringing up their children, do you call that an act of kindness? They must act that way. Therefore, we should force our demands on God. He is our father and mother, isn't he? If the son demands his patrimony and gives up food and drink in order to enforce his demand, then the parents hand over his share to him 3 years before the legal time. Or when the child demands some pice from his mother and says over and over again, Mother, give me a couple of pice. I beg you on my knees. Then the mother, seeing his earnestness and unable to bear it anymore, tosses the money to him. There is another benefit from holy company. It helps one to cultivate discrimination between the real and the unreal. God alone is the real, that is to say, the eternal substance, and the world is unreal, that is to say, transitory. As soon as a man finds his mind wandering from the unreal, he should apply discrimination. The moment an elephant stretches out its trunk to eat a plantain tree in a neighbor's garden, it gets a blow from the iron goad of the driver. A neighbor, why does a man have sinful tendencies? The master, in God's creation there are all sorts of things. He has created bad men as well as good men. It is he who gives us good tendencies, and it is he again who gives us evil tendencies. The neighbor, in that case, we aren't responsible for our sinful actions, are we? Master, sin begets its own result. That is God's law. Well, won't you burn your tongue if you chew a chili? In his youth, Mater led a rather fast life, so he suffered from various diseases before his death. One may not realize this in youth. I have looked into the hearth in the kitchen of the Kali temple when logs are being burnt. At first, the wet wood burns rather well. It doesn't seem then that it contains much moisture. But when the wood is sufficiently burnt, all the moisture runs back to one end. At last, the water squirts from the fuel and puts out the fire. So one should be mindful about anger, passion, and greed. Take, for instance, the case of Hanuman. In a fit of anger, he burnt Ceylon. At last he remembered that Sita was living in the Ashoka Grove. Then he began to tremble, lest the fire should injure her. Neighbor, why has God created wicked people? Master, that is his will, his play. In his Maya there exists avidya as well as vidya, darkness, and it's needed too. It reveals all the more the glory of light. There is no doubt that anger, lust, and greed are evils. Why then has God created them? In order to create saints. Isn't that interesting? There is no doubt that anger, lust, and greed are evils. Why then has God created them? In order to create saints. A man becomes a saint by conquering the senses. Is there anything impossible for a man who has subdued his passions? Is there anything impossible for a man who has subdued his passions? He can even realize God. Through his grace, again, see how his whole play of creation is perpetuated through lust. Wicked people are needed too. At one time, the tenants of an estate became unruly. The landlord had to send Golok Chaudhary, who was a ruffian. He was a harsh administrator that the tenants trembled at the very mention of his name. There is need of everything. Once Sita said to her husband, Ram, it would be grand if every house in Ayodhya were a mansion. I find many houses old and dilapidated. But, my dear, said Ram, if all the houses were beautiful ones, what would the masons do? God has created all kinds of things. He has created good trees and poisonous plants and weeds as well. Among the animals there are good, bad, and all kinds of creatures, tigers, lions, snakes, and so on. Neighbor, sir, is it ever possible to realize God while leading the life of a householder? The Master, certainly, but as I said just now, one must live in the holy company and pray unceasingly. One should weep for God. When the impurities of the mind are thus washed away, one realizes God. The mind is like a needle covered with mud, and God is like a magnet. The needle cannot be united with the magnet unless it is free from mud. Tears wash away the mud, which is nothing but lust, anger, greed, and other evil tendencies, and the inclination to worldly enjoyments as well. As soon as the mud is washed away, the magnet attracts the needle. That is to say, man realizes God. Only the pure in heart see God. A fever patient had an excess of watery element in his system. What can quinine do for him unless that is removed? Why shouldn't one realize God while living in the world? But as I said, one must live in holy company, pray to God, weeping for his grace, and now and then go into solitude. Unless the plants on a footpath are protected at first by fences, they are destroyed by cattle. The neighbor, then householders too will have the vision of God, won't they? Master, everybody will surely be liberated, but one should follow the instructions of the Guru. If one follows a devious path, one will suffer in trying to retrace one's steps. It takes a long time to achieve liberation. A man may fail to obtain it in this life. Perhaps he will realize God only after many births. Sages like Janaka performed worldly duties. They performed them bearing God in their minds, as a dancing girl dances, keeping jars or trays on her head. Haven't you seen how women in the Northwest in India walk, talking and laughing while carrying water pitchers on their head? And indeed, I have seen this. I've seen huge piles of wood stacked up on top of their head. And they're walking up hills that I'm huffing and puffing to get up. And without hardly any strain, these ladies are walking up there with these huge piles of wood on their head, talking and chatting away with one another. It's wonderful to see. A neighbor, you just referred to the instructions of the Guru. How shall we find him? Master, anyone and everyone cannot be a guru. Huge timber floats in the water and can carry animals as well. But a piece of worthless wood sinks if a man sits on it and drowns him. Therefore, in every age, God incarnates himself as the guru to teach humanity. Satchidananda alone is the guru. What is knowledge, and what is the nature of this ego? God alone is the doer, and none else, that is knowledge. I am not the doer. I am a mere instrument in his hand. Therefore I say, O Mother, thou art the operator, and I am the machine. Thou art the indweller, and I am the house. Thou art the driver, and I am the carriage. I move as thou movest me. I do as thou makest me do. I speak as thou makest me speak. Not I, but thou. Isn't that beautiful? And those words from an unlettered peasant man, grew up very poor, and had the most wonderful universal vision of this world, of religion. He far surpassed the people of his time. He took the path of being a Hindu, several different of the paths of Hindu. And he also took the path of Christian and of Muslim, and he found that they all led him to God. Such was his great devotion and love for God that it took him all the way. So we have this before us, this example and these teachings. Most, perhaps all of these teachings are not new to us. But what is new is applying them, is really going to work in the laboratory of our own souls and putting them into work so that they may yield the great benefit. For many years, I was put through the mystical crucifixion. It all started one evening in a meditation group when the Kundalini erupted, and it put me into such a state. And I knew that something of a very much higher organization and origin and intelligence was working inside of me. And yet I was needed, I was required to make the right decisions along the way. In India, right action is called dharma. Dharma is doing the right thing, pointing your needle toward the north, toward God. And it may be a little bit rusty, it may have a little bit mud on it, and it's up to us to clean it off through pure actions, through pure thoughts, through striving and loving God, striving for and loving God. So this is the thing that we must engender in ourselves, is a greater love for God than for this world. Because we have become so habituated to this human body and this world, it is our default. If we do nothing else, our minds will just gradually always turn back towards this world. You might say that it will turn south, the needle on the compass. And so, in our sadhana, we must be always focused on God and turn that needle towards the north. Now, eventually, that can become our default, but it certainly is not in the beginning. And there are those who go so far on the path, and they rise up, and they have God experiences. And then suddenly some temptation, it may be sex, it may be greed, it may be something else, it may be fear, that comes in and takes them over. I've known people who have started in on spiritual experiences. And it has scared them, because they are powerful, and they are disrupting. Now, you might think, well, why is that? If it is God, shouldn't it just be pleasant and uplifting? But Jesus said that he brought a sword, and that sword is the price that we must pay in order to go all the way to God. Then there are some who just get a little cup full of God. And they seem to be all right with that, as if there is nothing more than that. And this too is a temptation that comes along the way. So there is a complacency. Jesus said it is better for you to be either hot or cold. But if you are lukewarm, there's very little I can do with that. Many of us are lukewarm in our aspiration for God. If we were to be asked, we would say, yes, I want my God realization. But our thoughts and our words and our actions match our desire for God. This is absolutely necessary. There are times in this life when there are a lot of things going on, when we have a lot of demands at home, at work, in other situations, and we feel that there is very little time to focus upon God. But even with that, even if we don't have all the time in the world for meditation and being with God inwardly, we can keep the mind focused upon Him in our work, at our home, with our children, with husband, with wife. To see God in one another is a tremendous practice to do. It takes away so many of the problems that begin to become impediments as we go to God. We look out at friends, we look out at people that we know, and we find fault with them. Or we think perhaps they are better than we are. And that relationship of being lesser than or better than are both impediments upon the path. All of us are made up of God stuff. There is no doubt about that. Now, it's not always evident in somebody's words and actions. Some people seem to go out of their way to try to prove to us that there is nothing sacred, nothing divine in them. But we must be more clever. We must be more determined to see God in each and every person and each and every situation. There are people in this world who get certain heights in terms of culture, terms of politics, in terms of business and money. And people love to tear them down or build them up, exceedingly so. And both of these are a disservice to the individual, because we do not see God in them. We do not see the divine principle operating through them. It is said that Ravana, who was one of the most terrible people to ever live, was actually a guardian at God's gate, and that a great saint had come to see God. And God had given instructions that he was not to be disturbed at this time, and so the guardian at the gate refused this saint entry. And the saint got angry, and he cursed the man, and told him that he would have to have many, many lifetimes lived in darkness and in ignorance. It was a heavy, heavy price. But you see, even this was working out God's will. And so eventually that guardian was given a choice by God. You can have one lifetime in which you are a very terrible person, but you will be helping to fulfill my will. Or you can have these many, many lifetimes of being a bad person, but you will not be notorious the world over, known that way. And so he thought about it for a while, and he surrendered to God, sensing that God really wished him to play this part in this lifetime. And so he was born as the demon Ravana. And he was the one that God came to earth incarnated as Ram. And they enacted out the play, and they did it in order to lift this world up. You see, this world portrays the principles in the form of Ram, of Lakshman, and of all the brothers that God would like for us to live. And this story has been passed on from generation to generation for thousands and thousands of years. And so it has informed new generations time and again of the correct way to live in this life. Now, there are many tough lessons in this story. And yet God is ultimately victorious at the cost, many times, of human happiness. And so we see that there is a higher principle than just our own happiness, just what we would like for ourselves. That when we surrender to God, sometimes things go wrong. If it can happen for an incarnation of God, such as Ram, such as Jesus, such as Buddha, then how do we think ourselves to be above that? For things will also be difficult for us. Many people imagine that getting on a spiritual life, things will become smooth and easy, a rose-petaled path, because they are following God. Doesn't that follow? And yet, if we look at the lives of saints, of realized beings, of incarnations of God, we find that this is not so. but their lives oftentimes are filled with strife and difficulty, overcoming, sometimes dejection and despair. So that we too should be prepared for this, we have been given the roadmap, the blueprint, by which we should approach God and stay true to Him. We must strive with everything that we have, because the gravitational field of this earth, meaning all of its attractions, meaning all of the things that entrance our mind here, is so very powerful and very strong. We must be willing to give up everything. Now, God may not take everything from us. Perhaps He will. But we must be willing to give it all up, no matter what it is. If we harbor anything, any little thing, as our own, as something that cannot be given up, then God will see to it that that too is taken away from us, so that we might realize there is only one permanent treasure in this life. There is only one treasure that is truly worth having, because it's the only one we can keep with us only. Everything else is transitory, therefore illusory. It is a delusion to think that all of these things can give you lasting happiness. Now, it does not mean that you cannot enjoy the temporary happiness that something may bring to you. But always you hold in your mind, this too shall pass. Even as when those things that come that are difficult or painful, this too shall pass. Everything shall pass. Nothing here on this earth is permanent. So we need to really focus our minds on that which is eternal, which that is always living, always being, and be willing to give up everything else. Now, even while I say this, I also say we must play our parts well. We have come to play a part. If you are child, if you are mother, father, if you are a worker, own a business, whatever it is, whatever roles God has given to you, then you play those parts well. You play them with Dharma in mind. How is the most perfect, the best version of this that I can be? If God has made me the janitor, how can I be the most perfect janitor in the entire world? A most beautiful soul that I knew, who was a devotee of Mother's. And he drove up from a town near Portland every Wednesday. And that was about a three and a half hour drive. And he would come all the way up. And then he would sit at Mother's feet, and he would always bow down at her feet. He was the only one who did it. And Mother would say that she would talk to him and ask him not to do this, and yet he would do it. He couldn't help himself. He was such a beautiful soul. He's so radiant, so filled with love and light and devotion. And it was wonderful to see, wonderful to see. And then one day I came to know that his car had broken down after many years of giving him service, of driving up and down, up and down. And he was taking the bus. And he would take the bus in, and then he would sleep on the bus, on the bench in the bus station all night. And then get up and make his way out for Mother's talk through the different buses. And I said, you must let me come and pick you up. And he allowed me to give him this little bit of small service. And so he was retired now, and so this was on Sunday, because he was a janitor in a church. And he would allow me to come and get him at night, and then he would sleep over at my house, and then the next morning we would get up and go to service. And I just had such great love for this great God-man. And yet, he was a simple janitor in a church. His wife was disabled. She was in a wheelchair. And one of the highlights of his life was when Mother was traveling through one time and stopped at his house and looked at his little altar. And he was so thrilled that Mother had done this. You see, it doesn't make any difference in God's eyes whether our station in life is high or low by social standards or by economic standards. It only matters whether we are fulfilling God's will for us. There's a lovely little story in the Ramayana where the great gorillas and the bears are building a bridge and they're picking up huge stones. And they're writing the name of Ram on each one of the stones. And as they place them on the water, they actually float and they built a huge bridge going all the way over to Lanka, the island. Well, there's a tiny little squirrel and he wanted to help as well. So he would take a little bit of sand in his tail, run out onto the bridge and shake his tail off and shake the sand off. Not shake his tail off, but shake the sand off of his tail. And run back and get a little bit more, and he's scurrying back and forth and back and forth. And so these big monkeys came to see this, and they started giving him a hard time in a good-natured kind of way, but it made the little squirrel feel very bad. And Ram was sitting there meditating as all of this work was going on. And he was giving the power of God to everyone who was involved. And the squirrel came over and sat by Ram's feet, and he's feeling rather sorry for himself because he was getting a bad time from these others who are so big and strong and could do so much. And as he sat at Ram's feet, Ram, of course, was aware of his mood. And he reached down, and with his three fingers, he started stroking the little squirrel. And it said, "That's why squirrels have three stripes that run down their back today. Because Ram is running his three fingers down the spine of this little squirrel." And as he did so, the squirrel started feeling better about himself, started feeling better about things. So you see, this world is an expression of love and of bliss. If God has given us a high position to fulfill, then we must do that with all earnestness, with all purity, and all joy. If he has given us some humble position, it must be done equally so. For each one of us is responsible to God only for how we fulfill what we do in this life. And then we ourselves are the recipients of what we have done. If God has created us with some bad tendencies, then we must strive with everything in us to overcome those tendencies. As the man says, "Well, if God has made me this way, then I should just be that way." And Ramakrishna brilliantly responds to him, says, "Yes, but the law of cause and effect is with you. If you do these bad things will come back to you." You see, suddenly the man is thinking, "Well, it's just not a free ride then. I have to pay the price for these things that I do." And it would instill in him the desire to do better. If for no other reason than self-service, strive to do better so that you don't have to pay the tremendous price that we all do when we have gone against God's will, when we have gone against what is right and what is true. You see, each day is a test. Each day we are on the field of action. And it is up to each one of us to live this life in all of its truth, in all of its light, in all of its purity and joy. It is not meant to be something that we have to wear sackcloth and ashes for. We wear normal clothes. We eat food that we feel is right for our bodies. And then we go out, and what we do, as Mother used to say, it's more important what comes out of your mouth than what goes into your mouth. Your words are very, very important. Are they healing? Are they true? Are they balanced? Are they God-focused? I'm aware of people who come to service and they listen and they feel uplifted and they feel inspired, but within a short time later, they betray themselves. They don't do the things that are taught. They go out and they start bad-mouthing people. They start complaining. Their words are not healing and uplifting. Now, each one of us are responsible. Let us really dig in and do the work here. Let us change our lives so that we will be changed forever. That our needle of our compass will always point north. That all of the mud is washed off. All of the rust is removed. And that we freely swing towards God. It's just our nature. It's just what our minds do now. And if there's something that's untoward, if there's something that's off, we immediately recognize it. And the needle swings north once again. Swings towards God. And that, in truth, is now our default. As our great Paramparam Guru said, Lari Mahashaya, striving, 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 one day behold the goal. The divine goal is suddenly there. And you had been working and working and working. And sometimes, as with all great works, it may seem that it's not going the way that you would like it to go. Things aren't as easy. But that's the time to get in and dig even deeper. Until you overcome that obstacle. God is more powerful than any other thing that will be in your life. So you don't have to say, well, it's such a bad thing. It's such a powerful thing that I'm struggling with here. God is more than that. But you have to put yourself completely at His disposal. And then you will overcome that. He will give you the means, the intelligence, the strength, everything that is necessary in order to overcome that goal, that obstacle. I know that God and Guru's blessings are with you. I also know He has given you everything that is needed in order to achieve the ultimate goal of your realization and oneness with Him. But I also know that sometimes the obstacles can be tremendous. But to remember always, the reason for the obstacles is to make saints. Through their meeting the obstacles, through their being shaken to the very marrow of their bone, and having to reach out for God like they've never had to before, they grow spiritually. And so it is with us. The crime comes when you don't turn to God, when you just simply give in. And you don't take it all the way to the source of all life. And then the individual is the loser. So let us not count ourselves in that category. But let us rather strive, strive, and strive some more. Dig deep. Dig to God. And when you feel His power, His strength, His glory coming to you, it will be more than anything this world can throw at you, believe me. It is true. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. Victory to the light in you. Victory to God in you. That it may awaken arise and become a blazing light within and for everyone in this world. Pranams, I bow to the great light within you.